Speaking in Tehran, Iraq's prime minister pledges that Baghdad will never allow terrorists to use Iraqi territory to attack neighboring Iran. A day of bloodshed in the occupied territories. Four more Palestinian fatalities are added to the list of Israeli crimes. China criticized the British Prime Minister for calling it a systemic challenge to the UK's values and interests. Welcome to World News. From our Tehran headquarters, I'm Behrouz Najafi. Now, beginning with our top story, Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi says that both Tehran and Baghdad have agreed on the significance of the fight on terrorism and any other source of insecurity in the region. Raisi made a comment in a joint presser with visiting Iraqi Prime Minister Mohammed al-Sudani after the two officials held talks in Tehran. The president said that foreign interference won't bring security and stability to the region. He added that any kind of meddling will only add to regional issues. The Iraqi premier then pledged that his country will never allow terrorists to use the territory to attack neighboring Iran. Tehran has called on Baghdad to stop activities of terrorist groups along the joint borders. Iran has also conducted a number of strikes on terrorist hideouts in Iraq's Kurdistan Autonomous Region. Now, we're joined by a journalist and political commentator, Mohsen Abbas, a while ago, and he said that the U.S. and Israeli forces have used the Iraqi Kurdistan region to try and infiltrate into Iran.
The reality is that American, Israeli forces, deep state forces, intelligence forces, use that region as a way of trying to infiltrate Iran by supplying Kurdish terrorists with weapons, logistics, and they have them holed up in the mountains there. And unless, of course, at the Iraqi end, on the Kurdish-controlled Iraqi end, there is a mechanism to stop these people infiltrating Iran, of course, it will lead to what's been happening, which is that many of these Kurdish terrorist forces have been part and parcel of the riots and the conflict and the terrorism that's been initiated, especially over the last few months. So Barzani had made two trips to Baghdad just last week, and there's been an agreement, apparently, for Iraqi armed forces and the Kurdish Peshmerga to work together to control this border with Iran and to curb this Kurdish terror insurgency, essentially. Iraq knows that it has a responsibility to take its own action and not have to let Iran deal with this situation. So it is very significant that the Iraqi PM has come over and confirmed their support in all these matters.
Iran has dismissed a move by the UN Human Rights Council to establish a fact-finding mission on the recent riots in the country. Tehran says it will not cooperate with the UN mission, warning that some Western countries are misusing the human rights issue for their own political objectives. And this is yet another cause of double standard, and in the case of double standard, as the UN is turning a blind eye to human rights violations in the West. It seems that issue has become a Western policy tool to exploit when needed and ignore when it's more convenient.
Last week, the UN Human Rights Council convened a meeting at the request of Germany and Iceland to discuss alleged human rights violations in Iran during the handling of recent riots in the country. The intergovernmental body voted to establish an independent international fact-finding mission to investigate the purported abuses. In reaction, Tehran has dismissed the move. Iran's foreign ministry said the country will not cooperate with the mission, stressing that it has already formed a national fact-finding committee to look to the events. Spokesman Nasser Kanani made the remarks at a press briefing in the Iranian capital of Tehran, as he showed up with a chemical mask in the presser, which alluded to Germany's support for Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein during the 1980 to 1988 Iraqi-imposed war on Iran. Kanani lashed out at Germany for co-sponsoring the anti-Iran resolution at the Geneva-based council, saying Germany is the same country that supplied chemical weapons to the former Iraqi Ba'ath regime during the 1980s war with Iran. Official reports indicate that in 1980, under the rule of former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein, Baghdad purchased over 1,000 tons of mustard agents from the West. Germany, the US, the UK, Italy, and the Netherlands were among the countries providing the Ba'athist regime with equipment and material to build chemical weapons. Over 350 large-scale chemical attacks on Iran-Iraq border between 1980 to 1988 on soldiers and civilians left Iran with more than 100,000 victims. Tens of thousands died on the spot, and many more suffered for years as a result of exposure to chemical agents. Elsewhere in his remarks, the spokesman of Iran's foreign ministry underlined that several United Nations reports have pointed to the fact that German companies were supplying the former Iraqi regime with chemical weapons. Kanani also condemned the hasty employment of human rights mechanisms and instrumental use of them against independent states, emphasizing that such an approach will not provide any help for the advancement of human rights.
The Iranian Foreign Ministry has also summoned the German ambassador to lodge a strong protest over Berlin's support for an anti-Iran resolution at the Geneva-based UN body. The ministry slammed the recent comments made by German officials on the situation in Iran, calling them baseless and meddlesome.
The Iranian Foreign Ministry has summoned German ambassador to Tehran after the UN Human Rights Council convened a meeting at the request of Berlin and passed a resolution against the Islamic Republic. The ministry conveyed Tehran's strong protest against the interventionist and baseless statements of German authorities to the ambassador. Tehran denounced the recent passage of an anti-Iranian resolution at the UN Human Rights Council over the recent developments in Iran as a wrong measure founded on a completely politicized and instrumental approach to human rights, which is categorically rejected. The collaboration of Germany and certain European countries with the unilateral coercive measures imposed by the U.S. has resulted in violation of the human rights of Iranians and strips them of any legitimacy and competence to make claims about human rights advocacy. Earlier in November, Tehran summoned the German ambassador over interventionist and irresponsible comments by the European country's head of state, Olaf Scholz, in support of the recent Western-instigated riots in Iran. Tehran blames foreign provocations for the riots in the country, saying it has provided evidence to countries whose nationals were involved in inciting unrest. The rioters have been going on a rampage across the country, attacking security forces, resorting to vandalism against public property, and desecrating religious sanctities. Earlier in the month, Iran's intelligence ministry said the United States and the United Kingdom were directly involved in the recent riots, adding that dozens of terrorists affiliated with the Zionist regime and anti-revolution groups have also been detained in the unrest. The European Union and some Western countries imposed sanctions on Iran over its approach toward the riots. Iran, in turn, announced retaliatory sanctions against institutions and individuals in the European Union due to their deliberate actions in support of terrorism and terrorist groups during the riots.
Now, the national soccer teams of Iran and the United States will face off in the last Group B match of the 2022 FIFA World Cup in a few hours. In a presser before the match, Press TV correspondent asked the captain of the American team about rampant racial discrimination in his country.
Hello, hi. Tyler, this question is for you. My name is Mila Javamardi from Press TV. Are you okay to be representing a country that has so much discrimination against black people in its own borders, and we saw the Black Lives Matter movement over the past few years? Are you okay to be representing the U.S. meanwhile there's so much discrimination happening against black people in America?
Yeah, that being said, you know, there's discrimination everywhere you go. You know, one thing that I've learned, especially from living abroad in the past years and having to fit in different cultures and kind of assimilate into different cultures, is that in the U.S. we're continuing to make progress every single day. You know, growing up for me, I grew up in a white family with an obviously an African American heritage and background as well. So I had a little bit of different cultures, and I was very easily able to assimilate in different cultures. So you know, not everyone has that ease and the ability to do that. And obviously, it takes longer to understand. And through education, I think it's super important. It's a process. I think as long as you see progress. That's the most important thing.
Another Palestinian has fallen victim to Israeli violence in the occupied West Bank, taking the total number of regime killings in the past day to 4. In the latest incident, Israeli forces shot dead a man in an alleged car ramming near Ramallah. Regime troopers also fatally shot 2 young men near the city. A 4th one was shot in the head during a raid on the town of Beit Amr in Al-Khalil. Hamas resistant movement says that such developments would only strengthen the nation's uprising against the occupying regime. Israel has been carrying out deadly attacks in the occupied West Bank almost on a daily basis. Regime forces have killed more than 200 Palestinians in the area as well as in Gaza so far this year. Our correspondent Mona Kandel joined us earlier with details on the Israeli killing of more Palestinians in the occupied West Bank.
The Israeli forces continue to use lethal force against the Palestinians under unjustified reasons. The recent victim killed by the Israeli forces is in his 40s, a Palestinian man. The Israeli military said that he rammed his vehicle at an Israeli settler or a number of Israeli settlers at an intersection near one of the illegal settlements close to the Palestinian village of Mukhmas near Ramallah. The Israeli forces chased this Palestinian man. Then they used their weapons and their arms and killed him. They didn't even investigate whether it was an accident or he lost control over his vehicle. Before this incident, as you have said, 2 Palestinian brothers were shot by the Israeli forces. 22-year-old Jawad Rimawi and 21-year-old Dhafir Rimawi from the Palestinian town of Beit Rima near Ramallah. Israeli forces raided the village of Kfar Ayn early morning, and confrontations took place between the Palestinian residents and Israeli forces. As usual, the troops used live rounds against the protesters, killing those 2 Palestinian brothers and wounding others.
Now, in China, calm is restored after weekend protests against restrictive COVID measures. In capital Beijing and Shanghai, people are back to the daily routine of mass testing for the coronavirus. And that's part of China's zero COVID strategy to contain the virus that has infected hundreds of people in the cities there. Amid lockdowns imposed under the policy, some Chinese cities witnessed street rallies against restrictions. They were reportedly fueled by a fire at a building in the Xinjiang region. It's said that the lockdown in the area impeded rescue efforts and led to the death of some of the residents. But the government has rejected any link between the protests and the incident. China has condemned British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak for making comments regarding the recent protests in that country.
The remarks from British side ignored and distorted the facts, violently interfered in China's internal affairs. China firmly opposes this.
Chinese foreign ministry spokesman was reacting to Sunak's warning that Beijing poses a systemic challenge to the UK's values and interests. Sunak's comments came after a BBC journalist claimed that he was beaten and detained for several hours while covering COVID-related protests in China's commercial hub, Shanghai. Zhao Lijian refuted a claim and said the reporter refused to cooperate with the police and acted like a victim. He called the incident media hype, adding that the British government-funded BBC immediately distorted facts and the reasons behind the detention of its reporter. Qatar has signed a major agreement with Germany to export liquefied natural gas as Europe is trying to find an alternative to Russian energy sources. Qatari Energy Minister Saad Sharida Al-Kabi says that the deal would allow the country to provide Germany with 2 million tons of LNG annually for at least 15 years. two sales and purchase agreements between Qatar Energy and ConocoPhillips will go into effect from 2026. The gas will be bought through an American firm and sent to a new terminal that Germany is scrambling to complete. Al-Kabi also stressed Qatar's commitment to contributing to the energy security of Germany and the rest of Europe. The German government has been under intense pressure as the country is experiencing severe gas shortages since the beginning of the Ukraine-Russia war. Speaking of Ukraine, the president there is warning his countrymen to prepare for new Russian attacks on infrastructure, saying that the raids will not stop until Moscow runs out of missiles. Volodymyr Zelensky said that he expected the attacks this week to be as bad as last week's. He was referring to recent Russian missile strikes targeting Ukraine's energy infrastructure. Last week's barrage was the worst yet, leaving millions of people without water and electricity. NATO, which has been a key ally of Ukraine in the war, has also predicted more attacks on Ukraine's power grid and infrastructure. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
ایمان را در خودتون تقویت بکنید، ایمانی که هم در اینجا شما را شرافتمند می کند و هم در پیشگاه حق آبرو دارید و با آبرومندی وارد میشید به حق تعالی.
In the path of the Imam.
In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. As a reminder, we discussed the election of Abul Hassan Bani Sadr as the first Iranian president and also talked about the events leading to his dismissal. This time, we are going to touch upon the period between Bani Sadr's escape from the country and the election of martyr Muhammad Ali Rajai as the second president of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Stay tuned, please. The period of mid-June till mid-August 1981 was the time when Abul Hassan Bani Sadr was deposed of presidency and Muhammad Ali Rajai was elected as the second president of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Bani Sadr was dismissed due to his mismanagement as the president, particularly in the field of administration of the war as the commander-in-chief of the armed forces. Many important events occurred during this period. The martyrdom of Dr. Mustafa Chamran was one of these events. He was one of the brave commanders of the war and had devoted his life to the cause of Imam Khomeini and the Islamic Revolution since he was in the U.S. as a student or a guerrilla combatant in Lebanon. The news of his martyrdom was very sad for the Iranian people. Imam Khomeini's wife was dumbfounded at hearing the news. Ms. Khadija Saghafi had said on Chamran, "Chamran was a mythical man. What we hear about him may be unbelievable for the next generations." A few days after Chamran's martyrdom, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei was injured in a terrorist act while speaking at Abu Zar Mosque in the south of Tehran. He was Imam Khomeini's representative at the Supreme Defense Council, a member of the Islamic Assembly Council or Parliament, and the leader of Friday Congregational Prayer in Tehran. He was the person who had mentioned some of the points of political incompetency of Bani Sadr at the Parliament. Just one day after this act of terror, some 72 officials were martyred in a bomb blast at the place of the Islamic Republic Party. The judiciary chief of the time, Ayatollah Muhammad Hosseini Beheshti, was the highest official who lost his life during the explosion. The blast was carried out by the MKO terrorist grouplet, which killed more than 17,000 people, mostly innocent men, women, and children. The imposed war, successive martyrdom of the companions of Imam Khomeini, economic shortages and criminal acts of terrorist outfits such as the MKO could not impact Imam Khomeini's iron willpower and firm belief in God. On the contrary, he kept calling on people to put their trust in God and resist against the enemies of Islam and Iran. In such circumstances, some people were seeking to attribute mythical acts and extraordinary measures to the Imam, but the Imam's wife blocked the way of such superstitions and the likely consequences. During a meeting with some of the ladies from various walks of life, one of the attendees asked for some miracles from Imam Khomeini. The Imam's wife answered, "One of the miracles of the Imam is that I have never heard a lie from him during living with him. Another miracle of him is that he never dissipates a single riyal, Iranian currency. A third miracle is that he seriously avoids extravagance. The last miracle is that, unlike many mystics who shun people, the Imam believes in people. He expects miracle from people and believes that people can work a miracle. Then she read out part of the Imam's words where he had said, "It is a miracle that you, sisters and brothers together, with one sound and clenched fist, have stood against satanic powers. This is the miracle of Islam, which has been manifested in you. This is a miracle that the martyrdom of a dear one stirs up a wave in the world. This is a miracle that ladies do not fear against tanks, cannons, and machine guns." Dear listeners, it is very interesting to know how martyr Ayatollah Beheshti was careful of every minute point within the domain of his responsibility. For instance, while Bani Sadr had gone into hiding after dismissal, his wife was arrested on the street. She was provoking people through chanting slogans in favor of her husband. Ayatollah Beheshti, being informed of the event, phoned the prosecutor general and told him with discontent, "Although we have differences with Bani Sadr, his allegations have not been proved in any just court yet, and even if they are proved, no one is allowed to insult or violate the rights of his wife. Thus, Bani Sadr's wife should be freed in less than 24 hours. If this does not happen, I will do the job personally as the judiciary chief." Dear listeners, Martyr Beheshti said these words while Bani Sadr had left no stone unturned in calumniating him and insulting him here and there. Imam Khomeini, as soon as hearing what Martyr Beheshti's statements read, said, "Mr. Beheshti is right. If that lady has been arrested for this purpose and she has no other allegation, she should be freed right now. Moreover, they should offer an apology to her too." Ahmad Agha was happy with the political piety of Ayatollah Beheshti and he described it to her mother. Lady Saghafi told him on Martyr Beheshti, "This man should be appreciated. Thank him on my behalf." The Imam's wife went to Bani Sadr's wife several times and, in spite of being upset with Bani Sadr, never spoke behind her in any party.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladheena amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri wa salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Asad Jafari.
I want to focus on anger and desire. Ghadab and Shahwa. Very, very, very quickly, please follow me. Sometimes I think we believe that all of anger is evil, all of Shahwa is evil. There are some other religions that say desire is all wrong, right? So Islam rejects the notion of celibacy. Desire is not all wrong. In fact, desire, when controlled and governed, is a beautiful blessing of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Anger, when governed properly, sometimes should be there. So in every single emotion, Ayatollah Naraqi has a book called Jami' al-Sadat. In that book, he says that every emotion has three levels to it. Okay? There's a deficient level of that emotion, an excessive level of that emotion, and a moderate level of that emotion. I'll give you examples. So with anger, for example, when I say anger, a lot of you might think, oh, anger is horrible. A person should not be angry. And some say, no, you should be angry in certain areas. Now, I'm not talking about the expression of the emotion. I'm talking about the existence of the emotion. Follow me very quickly, please. I'm running out of time. So, for example, a person who has a deficient amount of anger is somebody who is a coward. Coward. You're sleeping there at night, you hear a bang at the door, and you send your wife to go check it out. Come on, man. Go see Janu. Go see who it is. Let me know if you need help. Coward. Or somebody, let's say, for example, sketches a cartoon against your prophet, disrespects your God, for example, right? There's dhulm happening, oppression happening, and there's not a single ounce of a feeling inside of you. Not even in the heart of your hearts on the musalla, nothing. You don't want to face it. That's a problem for Islam. Buzdili has no place in Islam. Being a coward has no place in Islam. That's a deficient amount of anger. An excessive amount of anger is that you become a kalb, the hadith says, a dog. So for example, we have a hadith that a lot of people ask is that angels do not descend on homes where there is a dog. Right? A very famous hadith. People ask, well, does that mean that I can't own a dog? Is it haram to own a dog? This hadith. And the understanding is, and by the way, it's not haram to own a dog. It's a headache because it's a najis animal. It's not haram, of course. You have guard dogs, keep them outside. That's a different story. But the mafhum of this hadith is something else. In Islamic ethics, a dog is equated to somebody who's always angry, yelling and screaming at his loved ones, at his enemies, at his community members. Like, and the image is foaming of the mouth. You've seen a dog about to attack, right? There are people who are always angry. Jab bhi dekho yaar. Angry. Gussa. Yelling. Screaming. Inside the house. Tyrant inside the house. He walks in through the door and one's like, just don't even make eye contact. That's excessive. And the deen says that he is equivalent to a dog. So yes, if there is an individual who has dog-like qualities inside the home, angels won't come in that home. Yelling and screaming and disrespecting your wife and yelling at your kids to the point where they fear Baba. That's an excessive amount of anger. That's also not allowed. We're shooting for the moderate level of anger. And that moderate level of anger, if deficient now equates to be a coward, and excessive equates being, let's say, for example, an animal and a beast, that moderate level breeds courage. Look how deep Islam is. Does not wipe out the whole emotion altogether. Doesn't say, oh, all of anger is wrong. No, there are moments where you should be angry. If somebody sketches a cartoon against your prophet, you should be angry. If someone disrespects your wife and your family, you should be angry. What's happening right now, let's say, for example, in Yemen, that should anger you. The way the U.S. treated Afghanistan should anger you. If you're not angry, if I'm not angry, now how you express that anger is not my discussion. There are some who want to rah-rah downtown, that's fine. There are some who post. There are some who simply ask Allah in their dua to please destroy the zalimin of today, inshallah. But nonetheless, are you angry? That shuja'at comes from anger. Do you get? Now, that's anger. Come to desire. Same three layers. There is a deficient amount of desire. There is an excessive amount of desire. There is a moderate level of desire. Beautiful akhlaqi discussion. So for somebody who has a deficient amount of desire, they have no drive to do anything. Completely, absolutely complacent in life. They don't accelerate, they don't elevate, they don't get better, they don't better themselves. You could see them after 10 years, voy hale unka, hasn't moved. You ask them, yeah, everything is, yeah, there's no movement, no desire to be better. the lethargy that comes about with a person who doesn't have that drive from a deficient amount of desire. An excessive amount of desire, of course, is somebody who is, you know, who is gluttonous. Somebody now who has to have everything, can't say no to his desires. Right? Somebody now who is enslaved by their desires. The Quran says that these are people that treat their hawa as their ilah, their desires as their gods. You feed the beast thinking the beast will get full, but the more you feed that beast, the hungrier it gets. Gets bigger and bigger to the point where it devours you. That's excessive desire. A moderate level of desire creates modesty. Subhanallah. Iffah. For all of us, especially men, we need a good jolt of modesty sometimes in our behavior. But look at the deen. Okay? So from two emotions that on paper seem negative, please follow me, my young guys, you're a smart group. Seem negative. Other religions treat them as blasphemous. Islam says no, they need to be governed. If governed properly, they can produce shuja'at and irfah. Courage and modesty. Two beautiful sifat of a human being. The question is, how do I get there? What governs these two powers? The intellect does. The aql does. Aql has to be strong enough now to be able to ward off. When you're angry and you're fuming mad and your mother makes you angry, it happens sometimes, Islam says, don't say a word. Go upstairs, you can scream in your pillow, but don't say a word. But you can't take it, so you blow up. You scream, you punch a wall, you slam doors, you stomp up those 14 steps. God forbid you do that with your parents. That means the aql now took a back seat and anger now sits on the throne. When the order is reversed, aql now sits on its throne. You go back and say, Mama, I'm sorry, Mama, I was wrong. Or in desire, when we are engulfed by desire, we break Allah's commands. We commit this sin, commit that sin. Aql is now all the way down there. And shahwa and lust and desire takes over. You commit the sin, aql goes back on the throne. Astaghfirullah Rabbi wa atubu ilayh. See the pattern? Okay. How do we build the aql? Aql is very important. It governs the entire company. It's the CEO of our corporation. Ghadab, shahwa, and wahim are departments. What strengthens the aql is ilm. Now come to the hadith. Al-ilmu misbahu al-aql.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio.
please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EN.
In the limelight.
A new report has found that 91% of U.S. coal-fired plants have ash landfills or waste ponds that are leaking toxic chemicals and heavy metals into surrounding groundwater at levels that threaten streams, rivers, and drinking water aquifers. In this regard, we have taken a look at media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Truthout wrote, the site of a former coal-fired power plant northwest of Pittsburgh, the United States, is leaking coal ash and poisoning surrounding groundwater, according to a new report. Coal ash, the material left behind after coal is burnt, contains harmful substances like arsenic, cadmium, chromium, lead, lithium, mercury, and uranium, among others. Exposure is linked to health effects like cancer, damage to the thyroid, liver, and kidneys, and neurodevelopmental problems in children. Although coal consumption has declined across the U.S., the power industry continues to generate about 70 million tons of coal ash annually. And after 100 years of burning coal, U.S. power plants have generated about 5 billion tons of coal ash. The new report published by environmental law advocacy groups, Environmental Integrity Project and Earth Justice, found that 91% of U.S. coal-fired plants have ash landfills or waste ponds that are leaking toxic chemicals and heavy metals into surrounding groundwater at levels that threaten streams, rivers, and drinking water aquifers. It also found that many coal plant owners manipulate data or incorrectly claim exemptions to regulations to avoid having to clean up contamination. Coal plants are polluting the nation's water illegally and getting away with it, Lisa Evans, a senior attorney at Earth Justice and co-author of the report, said during a news briefing, adding, at least 91% of them are poisoning our water with hazardous toxics and doing little or nothing to address it. This is illegal. The report ranks the top 10 worst contaminated coal ash sites in the country. Gen O Newcastle Generating Plant, about 46 miles northwest of Pittsburgh, ranks 6th on the list. Groundwater near the site contains arsenic levels 372 times higher than the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's, or EPA, safety threshold, and lithium levels 54 times higher. Arsenic exposure is linked to multiple forms of cancer, neurological impairments in children and skin conditions. Lithium exposure is linked to kidney and neurological damage, decreased thyroid function, and birth defects. The Gen O plant sits along the Beaver River, which feeds into Ohio River, which in turn provides drinking water to more than 5 million people. In addition to Ohio River being an important source of drinking water to many Americans, people in the region also love to fish, swim, and boat out in these waters. Zach Barber, a community organizer with environmental advocacy group Penn Environment, who was not involved with the report, told EHN, adding, "This pollution poses real risks that are not being taken seriously by these companies or regulators." The Genon site, which has approximately 50 acres of coal ash landfill containing about 3 million tons of ash, is the only location in Pennsylvania to make the report's top 10 list. It follows the coal ash dumps in Texas, Nevada, North Carolina, and Wyoming, and ranks worse than sites in Maryland, Mississippi, Utah, and Tennessee. The most polluted site is in the U.S. is the San Miguel Electric Plant south of San Antonio, Texas. The report, an update to a 2019 report on coal ash sites, also details groundwater contamination at 292 additional coal plants in 43 states. Lisa Evans, senior attorney at Earth Justice, said in a statement, "Coal ash waste is causing widespread water contamination that threatens drinking water supplies and the environment. In every state where coal is burnt, power companies are violating federal health protections." In 2015, in response to nearly 160 cases of water contamination and several catastrophic coal ash spills, the EPA established the first ever regulations governing coal ash disposal, collectively referred to as the coal ash rule. The rule required sites disposing of coal ash to post groundwater monitoring reports on their websites. There is no federal database of these notices, so the authors of the report collected and analyzed the data to create their own. They concluded that many power companies are illegally manipulating data and monitoring to avoid cleanup requirements. Companies are supposed to collect samples from clean background wells that aren't near coal ash disposal sites to compare against the wells on site. But they found that companies often chose previously contaminated sites to use as background wells, making it harder to find evidence of coal ash pollution. Many plants also leave large parts of a disposal area unmonitored, use inappropriate statistical methods to hide patterns of contamination, and falsely attribute the contamination to another source, according to the report. Coal plant owners are deliberately employing tricks to hide coal ash pollution, even said, adding, "People live next to these ponds. People drink the groundwater. Families use the lakes and the streams next to these ponds. Leaving ash will make people sick and harm the water they depend on. But pennies over people has always been the norm where coal ash is concerned." Some plant owners, including the owners of Genon's former Newcastle plant, say the sites were already contaminated before they arrived, so they shouldn't be responsible for cleanup, according to the report. Genon's Newcastle plant landfill was built on top of an 80-year-old, 120-acre ash pond, and the company is only claiming responsibility for a small part of the landfill, according to the document. Genon must apply the rule to the landfill as a whole, the report concludes. "This approach is not only legally required, but also common sense. There is no way to restore groundwater at the site without addressing all of the coal ash known to be buried there." Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection, DEP spokesperson Jamar Thrasher told EHN the agency supports the EPA's enforcement of the coal ash rule by checking compliance with reporting requirements and deadlines for closure or upgrades. In 2020, the DEP issued a notice of violation for groundwater contamination and asked GenOn to address it. The company agreed, and remediation is underway, according to Thrasher, who said the cleanup plan recommends 2 more years of groundwater monitoring to determine whether the cleanup measures taken so far have been effective. GenOn did not immediately respond to a request for comment. It isn't the only company avoiding responsibility. The report found that at nearly half of the plants causing contamination, owners are not planning any cleanup, and most have denied responsibility. Of the plants that have agreed cleanup is necessary, only a handful have cleanup plans in place, and most lack clear timelines and fall short of federal standards. The report also notes that most coal plants are located in or near environmental justice communities, communities that are primarily made up of low-income residents and or people of color, and that 70% of coal ash ponds that are dangerously close to groundwater are located in communities that are primarily black or brown.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Current world order will be replaced by a new order where US is isolated, Asia powerful, resistance front expanded. This is the part of a speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution during a meeting with students on Wednesday, November 2nd, 2022. This meeting was held on the occasion of National Students' Day and National Day of Fighting Against Global Arrogance, which are commemorated on the 13th of Aban, 4th of November. The United States also played an obvious role in the recent riots that took place in our country in the past few weeks. Whoever is person to have collaborated with these criminals or has played any sort of role in these atrocities will undoubtedly be punished, God willing. I'd now like to share a few words with you, young people. First of all, the teenagers of today, unlike the teenagers of the past, is a mature element, a wise element. It was not like this during my time. I'll tell you, I'm talking about myself here. When the case of August 19th occurred, like many of you here, I was around 14 or 15 years old. There was a specter of cases happening before our eyes, but determining who they were, on whose side this person was, on whose side that person was, what was their purpose, why were they doing the things that they were doing? No, we did not pay attention to these matters.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The teenagers today are not like this. The teenager of today thinks, analyzes issues, understands the analysis correctly, and realizes the things. The young people of today are analytical people. This is very important. It is very significant. Our children and our youth have things to say. And this is the nature of the Islamic Revolution. Let me say this. This is the nature of the Islamic Revolution. If there was no Islamic Revolution, our young people, not teenagers and children now, young people in their 20s, they would be so preoccupied with frivolities and lost that they would not even remember to think about the country's fundamental issues. That is how it was back in the day. I used to come close to here in these streets. There was a place called the Youth Palace behind City Park. It was early in the evening. A number of young people had left the palace and had come out onto the streets. It was some sort of a party. I was a seminary then. I was passing by, and it really perplexed you to see the way these young people were dressed and the things they would do on the streets. Now, with a young person with these characteristics, be bothered to think about the country's political issues, the country's future, their responsibilities, and these sort of things? It was the Islamic Revolution that awakened the youth.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.